11 to order. Members, we are going to have an overview today from the Clean Water Council. Clean Water Council overview, I should say, excuse me. You have information in your packets, I believe. I think the annual report, along with, I think, a PowerPoint presentation. But we'll be starting out with, I guess we have two testifiers here today. The first one is Keith Hansen from the Clean Water Council Chair. Welcome to the committee.
Thank you.
Thank you for your time.
Also with me today is Victoria Reinhardt.
Yes. Okay. Very good.
Duties today. So.
You're going to tag team?
Yes, sir.
Wonderful.
Are we using this or not? Well, I just don't want to sit in front of it if you want to use it.
You certainly don't want it on if you don't want to use it. It's very loud.
I don't care.
All right, let's turn it off.
We have a PowerPoint. Is that right here that we can follow along with you maybe? Is that just as easy? Members okay with that?
Okay, now we don't.
Thank you. Off. Okay, welcome to the committee. Please identify yourselves and we'll go ahead with the PowerPoint.
My name is Victoria Reinhardt. I'm chair of the Ramsey County Board of Commissioners. But on the Clean Water Council, I am there as the designated representative from metropolitan area counties. And I've served in that position now for 3 years. Previous to just our last meeting, I served as vice chair of the Clean Water Council for 2 years. And Keith Hansen.
And I'm Keith Hansen. I'm one of the business reps that's on the Clean Water Council. I've been at the council for about 3 years, just as Victoria has, and I was the past chair of the Budget and Outcomes Committee, which developed the budget that's in front of you today. So with that, I think I can turn it over to Victoria, and she can go through the overview of the council, and then I can get into some of the budget recommendations that the council's made.
Thank you.
Thank you. Well, and first of all, I would really like to say thank you for giving the Clean Water Council this opportunity to give an overview of who we are, what we have done over the last number of years, and what kind of moving into then what do we hope to do and what do we hope to offer you as the legislature on what will be coming up next. So I will be giving you the overview of the history of the Clean Water Council. So if you go to the slide that is... Sorry. Go to the slide that is the evolution of the Clean Water Council. You'll see really trying to answer the question of why was the Clean Water Council formed in the first place. And it goes back to the waters, obviously, in our state and the impaired waters and trying to figure out, well, what can we do to deal with that? So it required the assessment of the state's waters and the completion of the TMDLs, the total maximum daily loads, and really looked at, or what we were trying to do, was to deal with the 40% of Minnesota's waters that are impaired. And obviously, it doesn't take a lot to figure out that when you are talking about the state with 10,000 lakes, which we know is actually more than that, if you have 40% of our waters that are impaired, we need to do something now so that it doesn't get worse, and in fact, hopefully we can improve that.
Excuse me, Ms. Reinhardt. I'm sorry, I apologize. The machine is working, so if you move to the right, excuse me, your left a little bit, everybody will be able to see it.
Okay.
Thank you.
Well, then we can...
There you go. Thank you.
Okay. All right. As long as we've got it on. Then the G16, which is representatives from a number of state agencies in the counties, and really kind of the Clean Water Council was kind of built on those efforts. You had the zoning, planning and zoning administrators, and a lot of different folks that were involved in the G16. And I think that the G16 stood for the number of agencies or representatives that were part of that. And it was all really trying to figure out what do we do to try to solve this issue of the impaired waters in Minnesota. And with that, or out of that, and working with the legislature, came the development of the Clean Water Legacy Act. The purpose, as you can see, is to protect, restore, and preserve the quality of Minnesota surface waters by providing authority, direction, and resources to achieve and maintain water quality. water quality standards for surface waters as required under the Federal Clean Water Act. And I know that there are obviously changes happening at the federal level as well. But really, again, trying to look at what can we do to keep the waters that are not impaired in good condition, and to go back and to try to figure out how can we improve those that are impaired. And for the first time, really, bringing all of the agencies together, all of those impacted parties from the state agencies to the counties to the municipalities, watershed districts, everyone, and trying to figure out what can we do to really make an impact rather than just talking about it. Excuse me. So the Clean Water Council was created to advise, and this is important because, as you will see, we move into the legacy amendment as well, but was created to advise on the administration and the implementation of the Clean Water Legacy Act. Foster coordination amongst and cooperation amongst the public agencies. And again, really working together, we felt that we could have a major impact on the waters and trying to improve them. And working within the existing programs, because one thing that was very clear through the Clean Water Legacy Act was that we wanted to make sure that we weren't just layering something more on, but rather we were working with the agencies, with those implementers, to try and really leverage the best outcomes that we possibly could, and by doing that in a more coordinated fashion. The Clean Water Council itself, as I said, I am there as a representative of the metro counties, but in the Act itself, it really was very clearly stated who should be represented, so that we made sure that it was not just from one geographic area or just one perspective as far as their interest. For example, we have Ag, and we have DNR, we have the Board of Water and Soil Resources, the PCA. We have a lot of different folks that are sitting at that table so that we can make sure that we're getting all perspectives. And I can tell you that it really does lead to some lively discussions at times, because when you're talking about metro issues versus greater Minnesota, or some that obviously go over both but may pit one industry against another, we do have really good conversations. But what I believe comes out of those good conversations are things that can that there's enough compromise and buy-in that you can actually get something done. We have 23 members, 19 are appointed by the governor, and then the four agency representatives. And that you can probably read on your slide, although even on your slide it's probably pretty small print, but it does tell you the diversity of the folks that we have on the Clean Water Council. And that is the full membership. Right now, we have current vacancies in tribal governments, rural counties, and cities. And we are going through the gubernatorial appointment process to get those three vacancies filled. Then, again, the purpose and role. The Clean Water Council provides advice to state agencies and to the governor's office to foster effective implementation of the Clean Water Legacy Act. And this is one of the things that, again, we feel very strongly about because of the diversity of folks that are on the Clean Water Council. We feel like we can bring perspectives to you to help you as you are going through this very difficult budget year, but also very difficult times as far as the environment in Minnesota and the impaired waters, and trying to make the best decisions that you possibly can. And so providing that input, we feel, really will help you in that process. The public agency coordination, prioritization strategies, the process for scientific review, because, again, we really need to have the data to back up what we're trying to push forward and the best management practices that we are promoting. And then the education and participation strategies, because you can have all the best information in the world, but if it's not communicated effectively and the sound reasoning behind it, you're probably not going to make a whole lot of progress. And so that is an important component of what we do. Then, finally, on my portion of it anyhow, the council organization. We do have the steering committee, and that's basically the The executive committee, I guess, would be another way to look at it, but really trying to make sure that when we bring the folks together from across the state, and we do this on a monthly basis, that we really have information that will help us put together the recommendations or the thoughts that we can then provide to you as you are going through your deliberations. We have a budget and outcomes committee because one of the things that we heard loud and clear and is very important, especially when you're looking at local government perspectives, but I think all across the board, is that we really want to have measurable outcomes. We want to be able to see that, again, we're not just planning, and all of the scientific information is an important aspect of getting something done that is going to be effective, but we want to make sure that we've got implementation on the ground, work that's being done so that you can see how this is really having a positive impact on the environment and, in our case, specifically clean water. And then we do have ad hoc work groups as well, because sometimes there are things that you just need to delve a little bit deeper into. And when you have 23 people that are getting together once a month, sometimes you can't get that all done in that few-hour period. And so we do form ad hoc work groups from time to time so that we can delve a little bit deeper into something and then bring that back to the full council.
Yeah. Excuse me, Ms. Reinhart, could you dive into that a little bit deeper, the ad hoc work groups, how that comes about, how do you appoint them? Give us an example as to what an ad hoc group would work and how much time would they spend on it. I suppose it depends upon the issue. But
well, and actually the ad hoc work groups are a little bit different than what we just changed our structure not all that long ago. We did have actual standing committees, and so now we're doing things in a more focused fashion with the ad hoc work groups. For example, some of the education materials we did, or we participated in the Clean Water Roundtable, and making sure that we had the appropriate folks there that could bring forward the data that we have pulled together, make presentations as far as the Clean Water Roundtable, and have input to that. And so what we were trying to do at that point was trying to delve more into some of the data. The University of Minnesota obviously is one of the folks that sit on this, and they were able to provide information. The clean water, or the framework, the water framework.
Sustainable,
thank you. I couldn't remember. We had a group of about, I think there were four folks that were really involved in getting the information from each of the committee meetings that they had, and then in charge of reporting back to the full council so that that could be provided as input into our recommendations. So that there are things that are going on, and that actually is a very good example of that framework work that is going on that we knew was going to have an impact here, and instead of doing it in silos, we tried to figure out a way to bring it into our work as well. But it didn't require 23 people to keep that connection. It did require about four people to keep that connection. Is that helpful?
It does. The other question I guess I would have, just maybe for the group's understanding then, you said you had standing committees versus ad hoc committees. Standing committees did not work for you?
Well, what we determined was that there were some things that we wanted to delve in deeper to, and we had, for example, one of the committees was outreach and education. Well, we realized that there were, when you have the TMDL committee, we had civic engagement. I'm trying to remember some of the names of the committees. But we realized that there was overlap, and when you had folks that were meeting on a monthly basis, that there wasn't necessarily something that you always had specifically for them to do. But that if you wanted to, if you were in the outreach and education committee and you had some input that you wanted to provide, that there was a lot of activity going on with the TMDLs, and some reporting or implementation best management practices that were going on, that you would rather spend your time on that, you weren't locked into just one committee.
Sure.
So what we found is that you get more diversity and it's more focused so that it's work product oriented.
Thank you.
Okay. That leads
Excuse
us very nice.
Question, oh. Senator Higgins.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Commissioner Reinhart, did you find that members of the council put in huge amounts of work every month on the council, or did it really vary a little? About how much time commitment has this been for the members of the council?
Ms. Reiner.
Thank you, Mr. Chair, Senator. We have, it does vary. I was, as vice chair of the Clean Water Council, I was also part of the steering committee, which meant that I had two meetings per month. There were times, and I know Keith can speak to this, as far as the budget and outcomes committee. I know that he and his committee members spent many, many hours for that particular work product. I would say that whether it's the ad hoc groups or the full council and the ad hoc work groups, that we generally tried to fit everything into that one day because we had people coming in from across the state. And then for the steering committee, because we still had people coming in from across the state, we would also try to set that up as a video conference so that people didn't have to travel for that. So that would be one afternoon, probably, I would say, 3 to 4 hours. And then the Clean Water Council itself is once a month, and that goes from 9 until as late as 3. Obviously, all the prep that you do for any meeting is additional time. And if you chose to serve on an ad hoc work group, before you got into that, you knew approximately what time you were going to be expending on that and also the duration of it. Because, again, that was one of the reasons for the ad hoc work groups is we didn't need to meet every month as just regular subcommittees, but there were some times where we really needed to spend more focused time that maybe wasn't during that Clean Water Council meeting. So generally speaking, I would say probably most members, and I hope I'm not speaking out of turn, but I would say one day a month.
Thank you.
That helps.
Mr. Chair, Senator, just to expound on that a little bit from a time commitment standpoint, a lot will depend upon the type of issue that that we're having that ad hoc work group come together with. The budget committee, I think, is a little different animal by itself because we've had, and I'll get into this when I talk about the budget, but there's a lot of communication coordination back and forth with the agencies to come up with an initial budget. So there's a higher level of commitment when you get into the standing committee, such as the budget and outcomes. The ad hoc groups are probably a little less because we're trying to function as a committee of the whole right now versus get into individual work groups.
Senator Scoy.
Thank you, Mr. Chair, and Commissioner Reinhart. You mentioned a little bit of your TMDL ad hoc work group, and I'm looking at this budget, and I see that there's $2.3 million for TMDL research and database development. Can you walk me through that just a little bit? What exactly was the council working on there?
Mr. Chair, Senator, the TMDL wasn't an ad hoc work group. It was the one of the standing committees, and it is one of the main work products that we are now trying to work with as a full committee. If there's more detailed information that we need, then we will gather that from a few folks and then bring that back to the full council. But if I could get through just the work products here, and then when we get to the recommendations and how we came up with the dollar amounts and the process that we went through, Keith is going to handle that part. And so if he doesn't answer it, then we can come back to me.
Thank you. Ms. Reiner.
Okay. Thank you. The work products, then, are an implementation plan for the Clean Water Legacy Act and the biennial updates. You will have seen, you hopefully have a copy of the biennial report, along with the budget recommendations to the governor and the legislature in even-numbered years. And again, Keith will go through that in detail. And then the biennial progress and accomplishment reports, which are done in the odd-numbered years. So I would like to turn it over to Keith.
Thank you, Ms. Reinhart. Mr. Hansen.
Mr. Chair, Senators, I'll spend a little bit of time on the first item here, the Budget and Outcomes Committee process, because I think that'll get at some of the questions that maybe have already been posed. generally speaking, in the even-numbered years, the Budget Committee, as it's now stated, will start working with the respective agencies to come up with a draft funding level request. Generally, in the past year, we started a little later than normally because of the reorganization that we had. We basically sat down and asked each of the individual agencies to come to the Budget and Outcomes Committee with a recommended budget. And then we went into probably a 2 to 3 month exchange of, you know, trying to get a better grasp from the council member's perspective as to what those budget, what was entailed within those budgets, and to get some detailed ideas as to what was there. When we first started that process in April and the agencies first came back, we were looking at a potential of $186-187 million. And through the Office of Management and Budget, we knew that our target goal was going to be about $176.5 million. So we worked with the agencies over the course of a couple months to revise budgets, get a better estimate, a lot of back and forth and questions from the council or from the Budget and Out Committee's members to explain what types of programs and that they felt they wanted to continue on with. We also asked them for a lot of information where we had grants and loans program, what the past history was, whether the requests far exceeded the levels of funding that were out there, whether there was a lack of interest in those programs. So we looked for a lot of background information to help establish the numbers that I'm going to go through with you. So once we got done with that and we were comfortable with what the agencies had given us and as how we've tweaked it, we went out and had requested public input, not only from the council members because they represented a lot of the same organizations that were part of the G16, but they went back out, reviewed that within their organizations to make sure that we weren't missing anything, and then we went out and had what I would call an abbreviated public comment period. And I'll come back to the public comment period towards the end of the end of the presentation. So. And after we had the public comment period, we took those comments, and I think we made 3 or 4 changes to the overall budget that I'll present to you here shortly. So that was a valuable process, and it's a process that I think we need to build off when we get into the 2012 budget year. So the council then approved the budget in November of 2010, and we distributed it to the previous chairs and the governor on December 1st as required by the legislation. And then the new chairs and the governor received the budget packet in early January. Overall, this pie chart is in the council's report. Overall, the area in green that we show here is basically what we figure represents on-the-ground application. The goal of the council is to get things implemented on the ground, not spend a lot of time on overhead types of expenses, although there is a chunk for education and civic engagement that deals with the actual trying to work with individual landowners and those that are impacted from an impairment standpoint and to try to get them involved. The 25% that showed here through monitoring and assessment and the watershed planning strategies are basically the Clean Water Act requirements that Victoria had mentioned earlier. The agencies are required to do monitoring assessment by the Clean Water Act, and they're required to do restoration strategies for those waters that are impaired. And this used to be called the TMDL strategies, but what we've done, and we've made the recommendations and the agencies have gone along with it, is that we want to make this both restoration and protection to be able to meet the requirements of the Clean Water Legacy Act. So overall, this is our budget recommendations are coming in at a little under $176.5 million. We look at everything on an activity code perspective, which is the far left column, the monitoring assessment, the watershed restoration, which is the TMDL strategies, as I've suggested, drinking water, non-point source, and the next slide will get into a couple of the others. Overall, The council's recommendation for monitoring assessment is about $21 million. That's pretty consistent with where we were in the last biennium. Those funds go to PCA, DNR, and MDA, primarily to look at water quality, what the existing water quality is, look at the impacts on fish through fish advisories, those types of things, and other aquatic plants, and also from a pesticide standpoint from MDA. So that's the overall the big picture point of view from where the monitoring assessment dollars go. Under watershed restoration and protection strategies, again, about a little under $23 million, primarily for PCA and for the DNR. The DNR gets involved with the technical assistance aspect of it and also aids in the development of the protection strategies. Majority of these funds, however, do go to PCA at this point in time. Under drinking water protection, the Clean Water Legacy Act has a requirement that a minimum of 5% goes to drinking water protection. This figure, about $14 million, is approximately 8% of the total funding recommendation that the council has put together. A number of different agencies are involved with this. Basically, the types of activities that are getting done here are to enhance ambient water monitoring networks, including looking at various nitrate levels from an ag standpoint, water supply planning, the Twin City Metro water supply plan with through Met Council, and also from a health perspective, assessing and evaluate health-based guidance for contaminants of emerging concern. And there's also funds available here to accelerate the statewide source water protection and well sealing programs within the Department of Health. From a non-point source implementation perspective.
Mr. Hanson, I have a question with regards to the, just so the group can better understand the drinking water protection part. You said it was a certain percentage of the total package, the total appropriation, not the constitutional amendment. So when you talk about clean water, just to be clear, it's mostly monitoring is what you do with those dollars? Is that fair to say, or are there some real significant changes that occur, or some dollars that go out to change?
Mr. Chair, Senators, this does not include the basic monitoring for drinking water protection. This is basically to take actions on the ground to protect groundwater source control. So it's more of an action type phase at this point in time. We try to roll the monitoring back into the assessment and monitoring piece. This is one of the things that the council has spent a fair amount of time is trying to juggle between the various activity codes. The agencies came in and they had recommended, let me back up. We took their recommendations and we were having a difficult time trying to figure out where they really actually fell in these various categories we're talking about. So when I get to the next slide, I'm going to talk about applied research and tool development. If you made a comparison back to where we were in the last biennium, the numbers have been increased. But I'll get at that in a minute. But basically, this deals with trying to implement source protection activities under drinking water.
Thank you. Senator Skoy.
Oh, thank you. While we're on this slide, I think I heard you say that watershed restoration and protection strategies, $22.7 million, primarily went to MPCA and DNR. Did I hear that correct?
Mr. Chair, Senator, that is correct.
And what is MPCA doing with those dollars to restore watersheds?
Mr. Chair, Senator, the PCA's component in this is to basically develop the restoration strategies as part of a Clean Water Act requirement. So it's basically, as we used to call it, the TMDL studies. But what we've also done is we try to deal with this on a watershed basis and roll protection into it. So we're not looking at individual water quality impairment segments any longer. We're looking at the watershed that we're dealing with. So it's used to develop those strategies.
And Mr. Chair, I apologize for not catching your name here. Mr. Hanson.
Follow up. Go ahead, follow up.
So they're doing the TMDL studies with that money?
Mr. Chair, Senator, that's correct.
Thank you.
Mr. Hanson and Senator Skoy, to that point, when you were describing the right-hand column here, along with the MPCA and the DNR, you also had the Minnesota Department of Ag. I don't know, Senator Skoy, if you realize it or not, but that's included in this area?
Mr. Chair, at this point in time, I do not believe we have recommended any dollars for ag in this area. You'll see ag show up in the non-point source area, and I think that's
drinking water.
And the drinking water protection.
I'm sorry, that was my fault.
Under non-point source implementation, basically this is an area that we've increased, the council has increased over since the last funding level. Primarily the dollars are end up going to the Board of Water and Soil Resources, the Pollution Control Agency, and Minnesota Department of Agriculture. And basically, this money is highly leveraged dollars. They go through grants and cost share type programs. So this almost $70 million will leverage other funds depending upon which agency they're going through. So we're getting what we feel is good use of these dollars. It also deals with technical assistance. And one of the things that's been a focus of the council is to try to do targeted implementation, to try to get at where these problems really occur on the ground rather than take a broadcast type of an impact to implement best management practices or other implementation activities.
Mr. Hansen, with regards to the cost share, we received a report from the you may have been here, maybe not, from Lessard, executive director, and he had it listed all their cost shares, all their revenues that were produced by expenditures. Do you have a list of that at all, or can you give us an idea as to, with the $69.7 million, how many extra dollars were taken in?
That, Mr. Chair, Senators, that information is we haven't been able to pull that together at this point in time. In the report itself, when you look at the non-point source implementation category or that narrative, it gets at a pretty high-level estimate of what that leverages. There's just, with the so many different programs, we just have not got down to that level of detail as to what that leverage amount actually equates to.
Ms. Reinhart.
Mr. Chair, I think one of the other things here is, again, going back to the role that the Clean Water Council has versus Lessard Sams, we don't bring in requests for proposals, and some of the things or the way they have implemented that, and that's in the statute. The Clean Water Council was formed before the amendment was passed, and so our role is different in that we collect this information from all of the agencies and then put together the budget and outcomes and provide it to you. So it's a little different as far as being able to report exactly where the funds have gone because they haven't come through us in an RFP process, if that helps.
Thank you. Just a suggestion, I guess, and maybe the rest of the committee can join in here. Is it possible that Bowser and MPCA and MDA would have those figures? I mean, when the bill comes forward, it's going to be It's kind of a catching, it certainly is an impressive number when you can show how many dollars you're leveraging with state dollars, and to get a bill to go through, that certainly does help a lot. I know, and not only in committee but on the floor, that's discussed an awful lot. So if you can't deal with that, if you can't give us those figures now, it's just a point I'd like to raise, I guess, with regards to.
Mr. Chair, Senators, that's something that we can try to investigate a little bit further and get back to you on. So
thank you. Appreciate that.
And I am seeing some of the agency folks over here shaking their head yes. So
thank you. I think the committee would like to see that. Go ahead and continue. Thanks.
Okay. The other four program areas or program activities that we're recommending funding for is the point source implementation program for the Public Facilities Authority and through PCA with the point source program for wastewater and industrial dischargers. These dollars, as we go through time, I suspect that this level of funding will have to increase as more and more restoration strategies get completed. We can see a need that the wastewater treatment facilities are going to be in a greater need for additional funding. So that's the one thing that I'd add about this with this aspect of it. Education and civic engagement. This is, from a focus standpoint, this is one of the two areas that the Clean Water Council, I think, feels pretty strongly about. is that we need to find a way or look at incentives or different types of programs or whatever to get those people that are on the ground in these impaired watersheds or where we need protection strategies to be implemented, is to try to get them engaged in the overall process. So this point will come up under our work plan also. So we're looking at, from a civic engagement standpoint of funding, I think to the tune of about $600,000 of this would go to developing regional specialists to work with the landowners in the focus areas under the 81 watershed concept to get that actual implementation activities underway. So that's the bulk of where this funding is looking at right here. And that program would get done through the Board of Water and Soil Resources. This level of funding, I think, is probably equivalent to where it was in the last appropriations. Applied research and tool development, as I mentioned earlier, when the agencies came to us with their initial requests, we had what we felt were tool development and research embedded into all of the previous programs that we talked about. So what the council tried to do here is try to get all those things into one pot of money, which represents this. So if you look at where we were in the last biennium, I think we were on $5 or $6 million. This is up, maybe it was $7 million. We're up considerably from that, just to try to get and identify the types of programs that we need to get rid of the whatever barriers might be out there to get actual on-the-ground type activities completed. Here again, this is going with Minnesota Department of Ag, DNR, and PCA. And the last funding area is the Clean Water Fund oversight. Basically, it's a pass-through from what was in the last biennium for the Legislative Coordinating Commission to develop a website to improve the transparency and potentially for auditing when the auditing aspect comes up for the Clean Water Program. This just gives you a snapshot of how all these recommendations on an activity standpoint roll out from an agency perspective. This is you do not find this information in the report, but it just basically tries to categorize, okay, with Minnesota Pollution Control Agency, all those areas that they had responsibility for, along with the other agency, just gives you a roll-up of what that level of funding is. Then finally, the council is currently in the process of developing its work plan for 2011 and 2012. We've identified these seven different categories as high priorities areas that we want to look into from a overall perspective and to try to figure out where we may have barriers to actual implementation. So as I mentioned earlier, education and civic engagement was a focus area. Local capacity is also that focus area because there's a feeling that there's not enough capacity at the local level to actually start getting in through some of the implementation plans, specifically on the non-points source side. So overall, those are our priorities. They are laid out in the report. And I guess that's all I have to say about that. And at this point in time, we'd be happy to field any additional questions that the committee members may have.
Any questions from the members? I have a couple.
It's my excuse.
I hate to be the only one asking questions today, but it seems like that's the way it is, so that's fine. I'm not clear on a lot of things here. With regards to water quality monitoring that goes on in lakes and streams and rivers, I know there's a lot of volunteers out there, lake associations, things like that. Do you get involved with that? Do you get involved with any of that at all or any testimony with regards to that? And where I'm going with this, and this is for both of you, I guess, is has the group ever talked about any small grants similar to what we have as an option in the other heritage part of the Constitution? In other words, small lake associations that could apply for dollars to help do some monitoring of things like that. Has there ever been any discussion like that with the group?
Mr. Chair, Senators, yes, there has. A lot of this local monitoring is getting done through, I think it's the Clean Water Partnership Program within the PCA. So we have had presentations. We've, you know, to see how those programs are implemented. But I believe that PCA does have grants for that, but I think that'd be better off to address that question. But yes, we definitely have investigated that aspect.
And Mr. Chair, again, the difference between the Lessard Sams and the other funds within the amendment is that they actually have the pools of funds that are available so that they can do RFPs. When we have talked about it, and we've had a number of presentations about different things that are strategies and targets, they are implemented through the agencies, because we don't have, as far as I know anyhow, under the Clean Water Council, we don't have a set amount of dollars that we can then divvy up or provide grants. Our role is to advise you on what we think should go to the different agencies and how those funds should be appropriated. So we get to the grants, but it's not directly through the Clean Water Council.
So that leads me to my next question then. You don't deal with RFPs. The council doesn't deal with that. I understand that. However, they take most of their or get most of their information from the existing agencies that are funded.
Correct.
They actually do the legwork. In other words, they do the RFPs. Is that fair to say? Maybe I should be asking
yes.
them, but they're the ones that actually do the work and bring it to you. You review it. Your council reviews it, and you either say nay or yay or nay, basically, to the legislature.
Well,
is that
they bring to us what they would like to have included in these funds, and we go through that and. Generally, we are working on that for a number of months to try to figure out, okay, what would we think would make the most sense as far as appropriations or advising you on where it should be appropriated. And so within the PCA or the DNR or the Department of Ag, they have different activities that they would like to see funded. They bring in their rationale. And the decision point for us is whether or not or to what extent we're going to include it in our recommendations to you. So we, the only nay or yes or no that we have on it is whether or not we include it in our recommendations, which is not the funding source itself. You make, the legislature makes those decisions. And what we're trying to do is bring all of that information to you about what are the different agencies doing, how are they targeting the activities that they're doing, and what are the expected outcomes. So basically, we're trying to vote yes or no on what we think is the best use of those funds and provide that information to you along with the background.
Mr. Chair?
Yes. Mr. Hanson?
And Senators, I'd like to also add to that. What we have seen from a transparency perspective from the agency is their scoring criteria. And we have had the opportunity to review and comment on their scoring criteria for the different grants and loan programs. So we have seen that. We have been involved with that in the past. And to try to help make sure that at least give the council's perspective as to whether we think they're heading down the right path with that criteria.
Okay, that answers, I think, a lot. So from that perspective then, from you getting that information, looking at those numbers, you can actually say, as a group, you have the authority to say, well, no, we want X amount of dollars to go. We think it's more important that it goes to this particular fund versus the fund you have it in. Do you have the authority to move that is what I'm wondering.
Mr. Chair, yes, and Senators, yes, we do. And, in fact, we did do that this past year. When we totaled up after the back and forth with the agencies, there was approximately $182 million worth of agencies' requests. The council felt that they had to get down to the OMB budget recommendation of 176.485. So we looked at the agency's programs that were submitted to us and discussed, and we scaled back some of those programmatic areas to meet that that funding level. So we did look at it from an overall priority standpoint to get to where we are today.
Senator Kielash.
Go ahead.
If I could clarify that, however, we don't have the actual authority to move the funds. We have the authority to make the recommendation on how it should be spent. And the way I understood your question was, did we have the authority as a Clean Water Council to literally move those funds and tell them? That we do not. Yeah. We have the authority to make recommendations on what we think should happen and to provide that to you, and you make that decision.
Senator Kielash, I'm sorry, Senator Peterson was first, and I'll get to you. Senator Peterson.
Thank you, Chair. One question I had relating to the grant process and the application process. Have you gotten any feedback from the local units of government in terms of if that's an easy process, a difficult process, along that lines at all?
Well, again, the Clean Water Council itself does not solicit grant proposals, but through the agencies, I think that the answer to that is it depends. There are some MPCA programs or grant programs or DNR, I don't want to pick on PCA, but other programs that are easier to work through the process, and there are others that are more complicated. But the Clean Water Council itself does not provide grant money.
Mr. Chair, Senator, if I could follow up.
Mr. Hanson.
I lost my thought. Could you just give me the question back one more time?
Sure. Well, referencing, Mr. Chair, the question relates, say, for example, pick one, the Clean Water Fund. You know, that you talk about here in your report that that's a competitive grant process, so... So who manages that one? Is that the PCA or is that the DNR or that grant process?
Mr. Hanson.
Mr. Chair, Senator, each agency has their own individual grant process or loan process. So the scoring criteria is different for each one of those depending upon the programmatic aspect that's out there. So it goes back to each individual agency.
Follow-up.
So my original question, and if, I don't know, that maybe that'll help you with your train of thought, there was if you had feedback from the local units of government, whether that was an easy process or difficult process. I mean, my question relates back to, you know, you reference here 210 applications for that one fund and that totaled $44 million and then only $12 million being able to be awarded. So my follow-up to that is, and I guess maybe it's a question for the individual departments rather than you, I'm wondering if you allow those municipalities, if they have to do that year over year over year, or if they can leave their application in place for future consideration. I mean, because you can understand, having served on a city council myself, there's a huge amount of time city staff spends filling out these application and grants, which I think they're happy to do, but oftentimes I think we might be better off somehow just letting those governments keep the money instead of having to go through other sources, but to get at these dollars. But do you have a sense for that at all?
Mr. Chair, Senator, the first question as far as follow-up with the local governmental units, that is one of the things that's on the agenda for our work plan for this year, to start looking at how those dollars pass through the state agencies back down to the local mm-hmm. levels of government, to look at what types of barriers that may be out there. So that is on our agenda mm-hmm. for 2011-2012. The latter part of your question, I think, is better suited directed towards the agencies.
Thank you.
Senator Kielash.
Mr. Chair, Mr. Hanson, with working with all of these agencies, I'm a little concerned about this money supplanting the agency's normal functions. And I'm just wondering if you could comment and give us an idea how this is not doing that.
Mr. Chair, Senator, as part of the budget and outcomes committee process, as we had our discussions back and forth with the agency, this was a frequently asked question. So we were very cognizant of the fact that we didn't want to supplant existing funding levels. So, I mean, that was it was always a point of discussion as we looked at each of these individual budget items. And I think for the most part, the committee is comfortable with the fact that we are not supplanting previous dollars. It's basically to supplement the existing program. So
just
just to follow up on that. So the agencies are saying we wouldn't normally do this, but this is a good idea. Is that? I mean, that's kind of the. It some of this seems like normal agency stuff, to tell you the truth. So that's why I have the question about it.
Mr. Hanson.
Mr. Chair, Senator, I guess my thought on that is that to these dollars will enhance or accelerate the implementation requirements from the Clean Water Act to actually come back to restore waters and to protect waters. So, I mean, these are ongoing activities. They're requirements, but the level of funding in the past has been relatively low, and they haven't been able to sustain that. So it supplements, I think, the dollars that have been previously available. That would be my take on it right now.
Mr. Hanson, to Senator Kielash's point with regards to supplanting, has there ever been any groups that have pointed the finger at you and said there is some of this going on in the past? Just to give us a little feel as to whether that happens.
Mr. Chair, Senators, I don't think, yes, it's always been questioned. No question about that. I mean, it's something that's on the forefront of the council's mind. Nobody has come to date that I'm aware of and said this program is a surplant. I mean, Gene Merriam's been part of the budget council, and that's an issue that's very near and dear to his heart. So he's kind of like the watchdog for us at this point.
Thank you. Senator Scoy, did you have a question? I'm sorry.
Well, Mr. Chair, I'm listening with interest to this discussion, and if we're spending $21 million with MPCA and most of that is for the TMDL studies, it seems to me that the money should be more appropriately spent on outcomes as opposed to additional TMDL studies. To Senator Kielash's point, it just doesn't seem appropriate. And I think that the public that voted for this would probably think that you'd be more appropriate if it was cleaning up the currently identified impaired waters.
Mr. Chair, Senator,
Mr. Hanson.
To actually figure out where you're going to get your best value for restoration or protection activities, you basically need the so-called TMDL studies or those types of work plans to identify where the loading sources are coming from. So it is that's the way the Clean Water Act is set up. The agency has to meet that requirement as soon as they list a water as impaired. So you need that step in there to help focus where implementation activities will occur, whether it be on point source or whether it be on non-point source. So it's an integral step in the entire process.
Mr. Hanson, if it maybe it's starting to come through the cobwebs here a little bit with regards to the TMDL. So we're talking about the dollars that are being expended, and we shouldn't be questioning this. We should give the PCA an opportunity to come up and testify if they'd like with regards to the TMDLs, but these are on the new projects. These are on the new expenditures, the new studies on the new projects. Is that fair to say?
Mr. Chair, Senators, I don't know that I'd classify them as new. I mean, are they new impairments? Yes. Does the PCA have the responsibility to develop restoration and protection? Let's deal with restoration. They have that requirement to come up with restoration plans. And as I mentioned earlier, they work through with the DNR with developing those overall restoration plans. So if you say if something shows up on the 303D impaired waters list, which is Clean Water Act terminology, then I would say, yes, it would be new. But you have to realize that PCA has been listing waters on the 303D list since, at least from that I can recall, from 1998, and not all of those waters have had restoration activities or implementation plans developed. So there is definitely a backlog, no question about it.
Senator Skoy.
Well, to that point, I mean, I understand that MPCA went through and did TMDL studies on the major rivers, and now they're going back and analyzing the watersheds. I get that. But it just seems to me that with this backlog of impaired waters, that the money would be better spent if you were implementing plans that was actually resulting in cleaner water, as opposed to a whole stack of studies that meet the process for a TMDL study. It just seems to make more sense.
Mr. Chair, Senator.
Mr. Hanson.
The study aspect of it, once we get through the first cycle of analyzing the assessment and monitoring the studies of the 81 watersheds, there's an anticipation that the level of funding for the study aspect will or may decrease. Therefore, I see a potential rise or increase on the non-point source side and the point source side. If there were more monies available, I would think that, and this is me personally saying this, is that if additional funds were available, I think the council would be recommending to put those into the non-point source and the point source implementation programs. But we're somewhat limited by what we've got available to do that. There's a great recognition on the council, and, I mean, the budget committee went through this over and over again, is that we need to get projects on the ground. Okay, we can supply the money to get it on the ground, but you can't bring the horse and make them drink the water. So that's where the civic engagement piece comes into play. We need to find that equal being and see where those implementation barriers are to get people to actually apply for the various types of grants. We think with the funding that we've made available or recommended from a non-point source side that we are maxing out the programs that we can right now. But there will definitely be activities or projects that will not be able to be funded just due to the lack of dollars.
And, Mr. Chair, I guess more to the committee and to you, Mr. Chair, than to Mr. Hanson, because this is probably not a fair conversation for him to be having right now. But that's the point of what I was brought to the committee the other day, is that there are alternative plans that can fill the requirements of the TMDL that's currently being done by these local groups, the watershed districts and the soil water conservation districts. And if there's a mechanism that we can work with MPCA to develop where we can utilize those plans with those local agencies, it would be a much more effective use of our dollars instead of doing another plan in that area to put the money into the implementation plans that are already in place. And I understand that there's some issues to work out there, and you know, we're going to continue to work on that. But it just seems to me it would be more effective if we were doing that type of mechanism.
Mr. Chair, Senator.
Mr. Hassett.
I think what you're referring to is the impaired waters listing of 4B, which basically states that if you have activities or programs in place at the local level, you would not have to go through the TMDL process. I personally have been involved with several attempts to try to get a 4B designation, and have sat down with EPA and the PCA, and that threshold is a very, very difficult threshold to overcome. Not to say that it can't happen, but that's one of the things that the council has discussed and we'll potentially look at in our next work plan. But right now, 4B is a pretty tough road to hoe.
Oh, thank you for your efforts there.
Mr. Hanson, I have another question with regards to your handout, your booklet here. Page 12, if you could comment there. I do see that you do have the Clean Water Partnership grants. I would assume that's what I was referring to probably as your small grants earlier. The one on the bottom, I understand, it's been asked of me that it's brand new, the Community Partnership Clean Water Program. Can you explain that program?
Senator, or Mr. Chair, Senators,
I believe that is a remnant of the legislative recommendations from the last biennium. I think this is a Bowser recommendation. What the council did was the last legislative appropriation dealt with about 15 different pots of money for the Board of Water and Soil Resources. What the council is recommending now is to consolidate some of those things into 5 different program areas. And we've got a detailed listing of what they are. So, I mean, it may look as a new listing here or a new item, but it's a remnant of what was done in the last biennium.
Any members, any other questions? I have one more. Mr. Hansen, you talked about public comment periods. You said you were going to comment on that. I wrote that down. Would you please comment on that at this point?
Yeah. Mr. Chair, Senators, the council recognizes that we need a more transparent process from non-council members or other stakeholders. And because we got such a late start this past year, that process was it was minimum at best. And what our game plan is at this point in time is to move the startup process in a budget year to include anywhere from, I don't know, 30 to 60 days of opportunity for other stakeholders to comment. One of the things that's on the table is to have meetings, 2 or 3 meetings across the state to present the council's recommendation and to get more input from the general public.
Thank you. That's a great idea to bring the council out into rural Minnesota or wherever. So the period then, the comment period, those comments are compiled where, and how do they come about getting back to the committee? Comment, the 30-day, I think you said 30 or 60 days. Is that correct, Mr. Hansen?
Mr. Chair, Senators, yeah, we're going to be looking at a proposal at the February council meeting to and try to finalize what that schedule for 2012 is going to look like. And, I mean, so it's either a 30 or a 60-day review. That those numbers haven't been determined yet. But, I mean, we definitely need more than a 2-week period, which we had this last period. We recognize that. And the comments that we got back this year in the 2 weeks, we got some very good comments back. I think we only got 3 or 4 of them. But I think we made changes to what the council had budgeted based on that feedback. So it's a valuable piece of information that we need. As far as how they'll be collected, I'm assuming Jennifer or somebody from the agency PCA will be with us at those meetings, and we will we'll be recording them and bringing them back to the budget committee, and then they will see if and how they can be incorporated into the overall budget.
Okay. Thank you. And just one more tiny question is all I have. With regards to the workings of the committee, explain to the group here just how expenses are. You have per diems, is that right, for all 23 members? Do they get a daily per diem? How does that work out? Mileage, is it similar to the rest of the committees? Just for a point of interest.
The non-government representatives to the council do not get per diems, nor do I think mileage is provided to government. Okay. As a county commissioner, I don't get a per diem. And I believe all of the other government representatives do not get per diems. There are other representatives, if you look at the membership, that do. And I believe that I've got a copy of a memo from the PCA that dated January 24th that talks about fiscal year 2010. It's not broken down by per member of the council, but basically for 2010, there was about $4,700 in food and beverages, because we do get lunch when we're there. Parking was 1190, and per diem and mileage was almost 10,000. But it is not something that is provided to, as I said, to government employees or elected officials.
Thank you. Senator Peterson has a question.
Thank you, Chair. I just saw one more issue here that I've been working on, and others have been too. On page 13 here, under the point source implementation activities, and maybe this is a question for an individual agency as well, but the NPDES wastewater and stormwater implementation there, are you aware that there's a number of municipalities working? You know, right now that deals with the labs that cities have at wastewater treatment plants. Those are national standards, and there's a number of municipalities that are working to eliminate those national standards due to the significant cost. And I am aware that half of those labs that the Department of Health regulates are actually government or local municipal labs. And I think that's part of the reason why they're working to eliminate that. So for example, if they would be successful in that effort, what happens to those dollars? Is there pressure to spend those on other things then, or does that stay within the fund, or how would that work?
Mr. Chair, Senator, I'll take a crack at it. I'm not aware of the initiative that you're referring to, but I think what would happen, I don't know that these would go away just because of a standard being eliminated. It may, but I think that's something that the council would have to take a look at and figure out where they go. But for the most part, that standard setting process, at least for the next biennium, would probably not be in place at the PCA, because it would be a federal initiative, is what I heard you say.
Mr. Senator, Chair, yeah, no, that NPDES, I don't remember what they stand for, but those are national standards that were just put in place last year for municipalities to meet national standards for testing water. And I think the argument from the municipalities is they don't test any water outside of Minnesota, so why should they be testing to national standards that just cost their local taxpayers significantly more money? And I think that's why they're working to eliminate being under that umbrella of those standards. And so my question was that $1.6 million, if there is an application to use that money because those standards maybe might no longer exist after this year, you know, what would happen to that dollar, those dollars? Would that stay within the fund, or would there be pressure to use them on other things within that area?
Mr. Hansen, if I could, Mr. Knopf seems to may have the answer here for the senator. We'll give him a try. Thanks.
Mr. Chairman, Knopf. Senator Peterson, the NPDES provision you're talking about, is that you're talking about the first line under point source? That's the National Pollutant Discharge Elimination System. Those are the point source permits that are required by anybody basically emitting any kind of treated water or whatever into any water body of the state on a point source. So those are the permits that are applied by the individual. Now, municipalities have to apply for those permits. That would not go away under the provision you're talking about. Those are the standards that those labs have to operate under. Those are they have to get, I think it's accredited or whatever under this. What was done a couple of years ago, the legislature required accreditation based on these national standards for their labs. In other words, the labs have to get certified under that. And as I understand it, there is a move to remove that for municipal laboratories, but this wouldn't affect that. This is the standards for the wastewater itself.
Sorry to Mr. Chair, sorry to have wasted your time on that question there.
Not a problem at all. There's not a waste of time when it comes to questions. If you have any questions, certainly ask those questions here. Are there any other questions? Hearing none, thank you so much for the report. And if any of the members do have questions, you certainly would be available for some questions after the meeting. And in fact, this is going to be all we're going to be talking about in this meeting. So if you mind just sticking around for a couple of minutes, that'd be great for the members to talk to you. And thank you for what you do.
Thank you.
Members, that concludes the meeting, and we now have a joint water sustainability and EQB joint meeting with Ag and Rural Economic in Room 15. That's a joint informational meeting starting at 4:30, so stand adjourned.